Hello, what is up, and welcome to Off the Books, where we're surfing the uncharted waters of accounting, of finance, and wherever else those waves take us. This episode is brought to you by Workiva, the risk reporting and compliance platform that makes sense of complex data. If you've uttered the sentence, "I can't, it's busy season," at least once in the past week, Workiva might be right for you. Check it out at workiva.com/podcast. I'm Drew Dubner, and I am your host. I am not an accountant, but I like asking questions of people who are, so finance professionals can do their jobs better. And we got a really groovy show today. We've got Steve Soder, we've got Nick Rinkowski, and we have a very special guest, Adam Roundy. How you doing, Steve? Would you tell the fine folks at home who you are?
Certainly, Drew. I am doing great and always happy to be here with you. Steve Soder, accounting enthusiast and Diet Coke aficionado. I'm looking forward to debiting some enlightenment today in our conversation with Adam.
And we've got Nick.
How do you do? I'm Nick Rinkowski, Delawarean by birth, contrarian by choice, unaware by mistake. And I am hoping to rectify that third one today by hearing more.
I didn't know you were from Delaware.
Wilmington's own. I'm a tax baby.
I'm well aware you're from Delaware.
Okay, huh. There you go.
And we've got Adam Roundy. Hi, Adam.
Hey, Adam Roundy here. I don't have any nifty cliches to my name or anything like that, so I am, to a certain extent, your boring, typical accountant as far as that's concerned. I'm sure if I had a chance to come up with something, then I could, but for now, we'll roll with it.
Perfect. Well, Adam, I think you're underselling yourself. You help drive the ship at Hallows & Company, a financial planning, legal, accounting, tax, and business advisory firm in Utah. And, you know, listeners, he's got a bit of a different path than some of the other folks we've had on the show, which is exactly why we're excited to have him on. So, right from the top, Adam, when we bring people onto the show, we often talk to financial reporting and risk practitioners on Off the Books, and you've had some experience there, but that's ultimately not where you landed. So, right from the get-go, tell us about your path and where it started to diverge from a corporate accounting or risk role.
Yeah, thanks, Drew. I'd say probably my path diverged from most typical accounts from the fact that I grew up in a little town. You had to go to a big city to get the education to do the accounting stuff. And that in and of itself was a divergent. But no, I like you mentioned, I've had some experience in that compliance and reporting and risk realm. Not a whole lot. As the little bit that I tasted, it didn't fit my taste, didn't tickle my fancy. You know, it was just not my realm. I wouldn't think that's tied to a small town or by any means, other than maybe the compliance side is just that, a compliance side. Whereas the side that I went to and navigated towards was more of the tax side, which is, in my mind, growing up, was helping people. Helping them understand their situation and their financial situation and be able to maybe better that situation through a tax return.
And that's kind of what you all do at Hallows & Company, right?
Yeah. So for the most part, again, that small town feel, we deal with people on a personal level, trying to build long-lasting relationships, you know, professional relationships, and help them out from that accounting and, I say accounting, financial reporting, whether that's books, whether that's a tax return, whether that is financial planning for retirement, even from that legal side, like you mentioned.
For sure. The whole spectrum of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would add in that in addition to maybe folks from small towns, Adam might also be helping accounting enthusiast and Diet Coke aficionado individuals who don't actually do their own taxes.
For shame, Steve.
You know what? I'll own it. I will totally own it. I didn't like tax and tax didn't like me. But moving on here, Adam, I know you've got friends and colleagues that took roles in corporate accounting, are working in auditors and public accounting firms. You know, I just wonder, since you've certainly had the opportunity to compare and contrast your role to them, I'm wondering, what things would you call out for our audience? And maybe how would you contrast your work-life balance to theirs? Because I know you're busy, no question about that, but probably a little bit different than those traditional roles.
Yeah, it is a little different. One of the things that I have found, and it's been more pronounced as I've been longer in my career, doing the same thing over and over, but with different pieces to the puzzle. So a different puzzle, a different picture, same pieces, different picture, right? The auditing side, the financial reporting side, my little bit of experience, and I may be wrong because I don't have a whole lot of experience there, but it's the same thing. I take the same account numbers and I do the same journal entries every month or every quarter, every year, whatever it is, for the same company. That just didn't appeal to me. Just like you had said, Steve, tax didn't get along with you. The audit side just didn't get along with me. I moved too fast, too much in different directions. And I like to see and apply those movements to different people in different scenarios and play with those pieces to get the best picture of the puzzle from my perspective. That's one of the major things that I would see from my individual standpoint is I liked working the people side, working with the people side. And I didn't realize that going through school. It was that consulting, that advisory side of things from a tax standpoint that really has drawn me into what I really enjoy versus maybe what I have in my mind of someone who sits in that corner with that visor on and punching a 10 key. Don't get me wrong. I have that too. So, and then in regards to work-life balance, it's very front-loaded as far as the first of the year with tax season, obviously. But the ability to take a summer or take a fall or whatever it is and do what needs to be done, but not have so much pressure in what I call the warm months, the fun time to be outside. I'm okay to be inside during tax season time, January through April, and work through that. Whereas maybe someone else who in that corporate setting doesn't have that ability because it's more of a rigid monthly or quarterly schedule.
I think in an ideal world, the financial reporting, corporate accounting personas, even the audit persona would say, hey, you know, I do play a consultative role. And I think to some extent that's right. But I can definitely see your perspective of, hey, if I'm able to significantly improve somebody's financial position through a tax return using our knowledge and our expertise, that's pretty tangible, right? You see the smile on their face or you hear the expression in their voice. I can imagine that would be extremely fulfilling for sure.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly the route that I meant. So no disrespect to any of the corporate accountants out there by any means.
Different strokes for different folks.
Yeah.
To that point, you have been mentioning, both you and Steve, Adam, have been talking about how different areas of finance or accounting appeal to you or don't appeal to you. And it's clear that those things respond to individual personalities. But how do you find that out? What made you decide to focus on your career in tax? And has your career thus far met your expectations?
Yes, my career has definitely met my expectations and maybe exceeded it. Like I mentioned, the consulting side, I didn't know existed going through school. In fact, he's another colleague here at Hallows. He's our business developer. He also drew as not an accountant. He sold alarm systems in the summer times while we were going through college. And he said, you need to come sell alarm systems. And I said, no way, dude, I am not a salesman. That is not me by any means. But I'll tell you what, if there's anything that I've learned that I am, it is that I do sales all the time. And it's weird, but it's from a tax standpoint or a how can I help you in your business standpoint more so than a, hey, can I sell you an alarm to put in your house? But at the same time, I've learned, and this is where it's exceeded what I even thought, I've learned that consulting really plays a huge role in that.
And doing good work is sales in itself.
Yes. Yes.
Absolutely. Speaking of sales, we've got to go sell a commercial to you, dear listener. Be back in a jiffy.
Hi, all. It's Nick. Today's episode is brought to you by the goldfish, not the delicious fish-shaped crackers, but the actual animal, which has a reputation problem for a short memory. You have probably heard that goldfish have memories of only a few seconds, but this is rank slander. Goldfish can remember things for months and can be easily trained to reproduce simple tasks in a short amount of time. If there is a body with a short memory, it's finance teams, which too often put up with frustrating, time-consuming manual processes and error-prone tasks for report after report, only to forget the agony next time the next report is due. Workiva is here to stop the pain. The connected reporting platform for finance teams makes those agonizing processes a thing of memory, automatically pulling in data from different sources and quickly formatting it to fit your needs. Plus, Workiva provides templates so you aren't starting from scratch every time. With Workiva, you won't even remember there used to be another way. Learn more at workiva.com.
And we're back. Hey, Adam, I want to give you an opportunity to tell our listeners about Hallows. So, Mike's all yours.
Yeah, thanks, Drew. Hallows & Company, been around for 40 or so years. We do what you think of when you think of a public accounting firm. We do the tax, the accounting, the payroll. But what we also add to that is the legal side. We have the ability to put you in direct contact with an attorney in the same room as an accountant. A lot of times there's back and forth that way, and we eliminate that middleman there. We have that financial planner side for that retirement side of things. I would say where our bread and butter is, like most places, yes, is the accounting and tax and the ability to help people know what's coming before it comes. And that's probably where we try to set ourselves apart the most is that planning side, the discussion side of, hey, what to expect and how to avoid it or better ourselves before the door is closed, so to speak.
I love that. So I'm really curious, how did you end up there?
Yeah, so an interesting story. I mentioned earlier, I grew up in a small town. My wife is from a small town. Her high school class was 13. I mean, it was tiny. We went to school in a bigger city, like I mentioned, and then had to find a job. And the jobs in the accounting industry are in the big city. Now, for Utah, big city to me is still Provo and Norham, let alone Salt Lake. That's big city, but that's where the jobs were. So moved to the big city, took a job at a large regional firm there. Got some really good major experience under my belt working with a lot of people in Utah and across the country. And then, long story short, the Hallows, who I've known since I was growing up, they came calling and they were growing their practice. And they're from small town Utah and they wanted to have their practice in small town Utah. And they said, hey, do you want to come be a CPA with us? And my wife and I said, you bet. Where do we sign? How do we get back to small town life, having grown up there? So that's how it went about, is the ability and the draw to get back to small town life, but still have the work available for big city life, so to speak, and bring the knowledge from large regional firm to small town, but then be able to expand and say, you know what? Yeah, we work in small towns because we want to live there, but that doesn't mean that our knowledge has to stop in small towns. It can extend to the big city as well. And we can be a player for sure.
Awesome. So Adam, what I think you're implying there is, hey, you know what, we need to use technology and other means, of course, to be front and center with our clients. And so I'm curious, big city accounting experience that you had obviously is totally juxtaposed to where you are now in rural Utah. I will add that you're maybe about a half hour drive from probably some of the greatest fly fishing in the Western United States. I'm a big fan of it. I'm curious, how did the transition toward a remote work environment pan out? Of course, due to the pandemic, but based on what you just told us, I would already think that you guys may have been making inroads into that long before, you know, anybody knew what COVID-19 was. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct, Steve. Knowing that the traditional accounting firm is people have to come into your office and sit down behind the big dark desk and bring information to you, our philosophy was, why can't we take it to them? Just like any other type of business, public accounting firms are a business. And what's funny is oftentimes these public accounting firms don't run like a business. Even though we advise other businesses to be a business and what they should do financially, the stereotypical firm doesn't do that themselves. So we started trying to think outside the box, and props to my partner, Cade Hallows. That's one of his main roles, is to think outside that box and how can we bring the firm to that next step, next level. And so we started looking into Zoom meetings and the virtual setting probably 3 years ago at this point, and working towards that. And then honestly, it was a hard sell for a lot of people because it wasn't quite accepted. And then I actually approached my partner and said, hey, my wife's family, they need some help. We go out there every summer. They live on a cattle ranch. That's where Steve mentions, 30 minutes from some good fly fishing. We wanted to be out there and help because we were there a lot anyways, and started to really push that virtual setting. I analyzed my client base and who I worked with, and there was about 75% of the clients that I worked with, I didn't even work with in the office. Even at that point, it was all through phone calls and emails. No video conferences at that time, but it was all virtual. And so the idea was, okay, we're going to try and push this. And I moved to this small town, even smaller than the Hallows side of things where it was originally, population 500 if we're lucky, and pushed the virtual side of things and introduced clients to it and got them used to it. And it's been great. And you talk about the pandemic. Gosh, we were using Zoom before Zoom was cool. And now with the ability to and the acceptance of video conferencing, it's been great. It's allowed us to reach those people that you never thought maybe would have been reached, because distance doesn't matter. Technology is an amazing tool. You talk about email and video conferencing to be able to see people's body language, and obviously the phone, and then the softwares that exist to upload things securely and all of that kind of stuff. It's really allowed Hallows and Company to move from the, like I said, the traditional, you client have to come sit in front of me and give me your information to a, hey client, I can be available to you and help you in whatever means necessary from that accounting side. It doesn't matter where you are, and bring that proactive approach to them rather than quote unquote sitting and waiting. You know what I mean?
And foundationally, I imagine it's allowed you all to expand your business in ways that you otherwise wouldn't have. You probably got a leg up on other companies out there now just starting to do the same thing with COVID.
Yeah, I think so, Drew. We got a Facebook group of optometrists actually that we were able to in a roundabout way get in contact with. And it's about a 10,000 strong group. And we have clients from Minnesota to Texas and Connecticut to California. We had some of that anyway, but it's just expanded even more because of the, again, the acceptance of that.
That sounds like a pretty tough gang of people, a Facebook group of optometrists.
Right.
Like Hell's Angels and then maybe them.
Right. I think you're right.
I wouldn't want to mess with them.
Yeah, this is more of a branding question, but how does Hallows differentiate itself based on that global reach? If you want to retain that feeling of a mom and pop, small town, individual white glove, you know, service, how do you do that as you scale, as you use technology to scale around the country or the globe?
Yeah, good question, Nick. I mentioned I didn't realize the people side of this business until I got into it. When you think about small towns, the stereotypical small town, and some of it is negative, right? It's positive and negative. Everybody knows your business. They're beards in their soup, so to speak. And the one family does one thing and the next family down the street knows all about it. Not that we want to bring that type of setting to the accounting world in our firm, but the idea is that from the other side, once something happens to one family and the whole town's there to help, they're there to support and ask how you're doing, and they know you by name and remember you and remember your situation. And as I've gone through my career, I think that's probably one of the main things that has allowed me individually, but Hallows in general, to set ourselves apart is that personal touch, that, hey, I know you, Nick, and hey, I know you, Drew and Steve. How's your wife? Or how's this situation? What happened? How's it gone since we last talked? Again, that proactive approach to and individualism to our clients versus you got to come to me. You, here I am, holder of information, and you need me to complete your information. It's the, hey, let's talk about your information. And I remember this, or I remember that, or hey, here's a situation that might pertain to you that I read about. This is something that maybe we should or could think about. That proactive personal feel, from what I, in my opinion, is what really sets us apart the most.
Excellent, excellent. And gang, I have to set this conversation apart with our closing question of the day to wrap things up. Every episode, we end on a closing question of the day, a nice touchy-feely, fun, lighthearted way to end a show. So we talked quite a bit about Utah, home to two of our panelists here today, and also home to the 2002 Olympics. And I just remember the Summer Olympics are coming up here relatively soon. So what Olympic sport would you do the best in? Steve.
So this was a hard one. I was looking at artistic swimming. Based on the pictures, I believe that is only a women's sport. So then that led me to breaking, which I think is breakdancing. I believe that's new. I would like to think of myself as a accomplished breakdancer. I'm not, but that's how I'd like to picture myself if I could, Drew.
I'll believe it. And so will the audience.
I like it.
This question brings me back to, what do you want to be when you grow up? Man, when I was a junior in high school, it was, I knew I wanted to be an accountant. But before then, it was, you know what, I want to play baseball for the Chicago Cubs. And if I could do an Olympic sport, it would definitely be baseball. And that would be heaven for sure.
Bingo.
Love it.
So I think we need all be clear with ourselves that all of us would finish last and bring shame on our nations in almost any of the categories. My logical brain wants to say the 100-meter dash because it's the shortest, and I can't get that far back. I would lose and probably be, but I wouldn't be lapped like I would with even like a 400-meter race. But I would like to be the second man on a 2-man bobsled, the person who pushes and then doesn't really do much else once they get in the sled. That seems fun to me. Although, again, we would lose.
Mm, yeah. I mean, table stakes, we're all going to lose.
Now, Drew, we can't let you get off without answering the question. What would be the sport you would do best at in the Olympics?
Well, I think the sport that I would be the best at, but ultimately hurt myself the most in, would be skateboarding. I think there's a new skateboarding competition that's going into the Olympics this year. And here in Des Moines, Iowa, there's the largest skateboard park in the country that's opening up just here in a couple months. So I think I've got some time to train. It's true.
Oh my gosh. Come on down. I would love to. We can't get on an airplane. That's the problem.
Yeah, that's the pickle. Well, I got to kickflip my way out of this conversation. I'm Drew Dubner. This has been Off the Books. Please subscribe, leave an Apple Podcast review, which really, really helps us, or tell your buddies if you like the show. Hey, if you want to be on the show, if you want to yell at us, write us at offthebooks, all one word, at workiva.com. That's W-O-R-K-I-V-A.com. Surf's up, and we'll see you on the next wave.